Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it? Podcast like it's 1999.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it.
Podcast like it's 1999.
Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it? 1999.
Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I'm your host, Phil Liskove. And with us today is executive producer, showrunner, creator of Roswell, New Mexico, Karina McKenzie. I'm very excited to have you here to talk about episode 202, The List, the infamous episode, the one where some might say it all goes to shit. Some people might say that it turns a corner and becomes a really interesting show. I'm in the latter camp, obviously. But yeah, so here we are to talk about the haircut heard around the world. But before we talk about that, I want to rewind a little bit and ask you where you were in 1999.
In 1999, I was 12. I turned 13 at the end of December.
So I'm old.
Yeah, 100%. It's funny because Roswell, the original Roswell started in 99 too. And I get people asking me all the time, like, did you work on the original? And I'm like, no. Really busy in social studies class. Kind of.
First of all, like, I think that's
a football.
You do not look like you were writing on Roswell. Let me just put that out there.
I think that is
a crazy thing for someone to ask. But anyway,
I appreciate that. Yeah. But 1999 has become this weirdly pivotal like year in my life, and when I was hoping to have my first kiss during a truth or dare game or something, like,
sure,
you know,
sure.
Writing in my diary about what it might be like to somebody someday kiss a boy and also running a television show, apparently. So.
Yeah, apparently. So you weren't watching television in 1999. Is that true?
Okay. So I was not allowed to watch TV as a kid.
Which is crazy.
So my theory is that if my parents had just let me watch TV when I was a kid, that by now I would be like a rocket scientist or a doctor or like a civil rights lawyer, like something they could really sink their teeth into.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they wouldn't let me watch TV. I used to sneak down to the basement of my house, and we had like an old TV with like antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And I would plug it in and sit 1 inch away from the screen with my hand on the plug. And listen for my mom coming down the stairs. And if I heard a creak on the stairs, I would unplug the whole TV and it would go like the screen would sort of like shut down into that little implosion. And then I'd like jump up and pretend that I was like playing foosball alone or like.
So TV was contraband for you.
I really wanted to watch Dawson's Creek because everybody at school watched Dawson's Creek. And if I didn't watch Dawson's Creek, then I had nothing to say on Thursdays. And I used to ride my bike to my friend's house and watch Dawson's Creek on Wednesdays, trying to, or I would like sneak into the basement to try to watch it. But yeah, and now my dog's name is Pacey. I like my parents. It's funny because I guess if, who knows, maybe they did the right thing because my great rebellion was watching WB teen dramas instead of like getting high or like tattooing myself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So you tried to watch Dawson's Creek in 99. My assumption is you were not watching Felicity when it was airing in 1999.
I wasn't. I watched Dawson's Creek and that was pretty much it. That was pretty much all the TV that I was watching. I was like, sometimes my mom would let us watch TGIF, but with her while she was present, because like, God forbid, Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, get racy. It's very funny. But yes, I watched Felicity. So Felicity came into my life. My friend Amy Kaufman, who is now a very big deal writer for the LA Times, was one of my best friends in high school. And she loved Felicity. And when we were in college, I went to school at University of Colorado. And I had kind of a rough time my freshman year. And I started considering transferring. Mm-hmm. And Amy was like, you have to watch Felicity. And literally the summer between my freshman and sophomore year of college, Amy and I watched Felicity and like getting the Netflix DVDs, two at a time or whatever, and sending them back, remember? And then we went to New York for a couple weeks and we like took pictures of ourselves on subways and like dramatic, like black and white, you know, photos of us like wearing like very Felicity outfits. Yeah. It's like 2005. Like it was, was done by then. And I actually applied to like four schools in New York and then decided ultimately to stay in Colorado because my parents were like, you're never going to live in Colorado again in your life. You're always going to be a coast person. So enjoy Colorado. But yeah, I literally almost like changed everything and went to the new school or NYU or whatever because of Felicity. Literally.
Did you feel like it helped you through the experience a little bit? Because I imagine, I mean, I was in my first year of college when Felicity started, and I watched the first season, most of the second season, I think, when it was on, and then I kind of tapped out, and I went back and watched it eventually. But it was not my college experience, just to be clear. I went to film school in Toronto. Like, it was not like this. But did this help you through some stuff or no?
I don't know. I think it like gave me sort of like this idyllic idea of what I wanted college to be. But like, I don't know. They're such good kids on Felicity. Like they're like what your parents want you to like be when you go to college. I was not such a good kid. I was getting in trouble. I was like, you know, stirring up shit. And I think there's this like line because my first year of college was the first year that Facebook opened up.
Okay.
To like everyone at first it was like just the Ivies, and then about halfway through my first year of college it opened up to everyone, and that changed things a lot. It changed the way that we interacted socially so much that this like very like let's wear sweaters and talk about our feelings and worry about virginity thing like went away. I was just saying before we started recording, watching it last night was like taking a Xanax. Like it was so soothing. And I think that if anything, that's what it was for me was like, I could disappear from like actual stresses of my social life and being hungover in class and all this thing. And then disappear into my room and watch one disc worth of like, what if I was just trying to decide between being an artist and being a doctor? And that was the great stress of my life right now.
So this feels like an opportunity to talk about. So you tweeted last night about how it's a lot of looks and pauses.
My God.
So my question to you is this. You know, you obviously, you work on a show. You've created this show. You wrote about television before.
I was a journalist and I covered TV before I became a TV writer.
Right. So you know a lot about television. And it feels like Felicity is a bit of an anomaly, I would say.
Yeah.
In the sense of how much air there is in it.
I mean, it's wild to me how much air there was in it. Because all I do, my greatest stress as a television writer is fitting everything that I want to fit into the limited amount of time that I have to tell the story. I mean, literally sometimes I'm in the edit room and I'm like, okay, well, you have her, you know, zipping up her jacket after she speaks. Can we layer it, put those things on top of each other so she speaks while zipping up her jacket so we lose that half second of time and I can put that half second of time later after the kiss so that it doesn't, like, it's the amount of space that I try to cut out of my show. And then they've just got Felicity and Ben like looking at each other wistfully while they try to figure out what to say. And I'm sitting there like, well, they know what to say. It's in the script. Say it. Spit it out. Like,
it's really, I mean, I've obviously talked a lot on the podcast about why I think the show is special. But one of the things I think that does make it special is that it lets you sit in these moments, right?
Which real is real life.
Right.
Like,
right.
In real life, you're not, you know, coming up with the witty comeback every 2 seconds, but it is really weird to watch now. You know, I will say they did have a little more time. Like there was a couple, those few minutes of commercials that they've now packed into shows that are, that takes time, but they also just, their stories were like, they got to tell, you know, I have to have a life or death story on my show every single week. Yep, so they, obviously there's a lot more urgency to it. But yeah, there was something so magical and special about these long moments where it's just air and it's just leaving the characters to think about what they've done and leaving the audience to think about what's going to happen next. But it is an adjustment watching it now. For sure.
Because it's like when you think about the fact that, and we're obviously going to talk about this in this episode, but when you think about the fact that her haircut is seismic, like it literally.
I cannot wait to talk about this haircut.
But it's just crazy to me to think that there was a time when that could exist on television. It's amazing. So I'm going to give a brief synopsis here. Felicity begins to question her values when one of her advisees seems to have better luck using tips from an article in a women's magazine. Felicity notices that Ben has a funny look on his face, like he's unhappy. She tries to make herself over to please him, but taking things casually isn't Felicity's style, and she decides to call it quits with Ben rather than compromise herself. Meanwhile, Julie lightens up in a major way when she holds a blowout party at Sean's. The List aired on October 3rd, 1999. It was written by Jennifer Levin and directed by Barnett Kelman. So let's just dive right into the hair. Let's just, because to me, it's like, it's the big thing here. I need to read a quote from J.J. Abrams in the New York Times from 1999. He said, "We take full responsibility for the idea of cutting her hair. People revolted against the look and the show. She's so gorgeous, we thought, who cares how long her hair is? The answer came back pretty quickly. Frankly, we thought of extensions and all sorts of things. Finally, it's growing back." You would think that this was state secrets or some sort of a government. It's crazy.
It's like the 1999 version of a Notes app apology that like a celebrity makes totally. A gaffe or says something shitty and like has to write an apology in a Notes app and post it. Like that's what this was.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's like a beautiful woman gets a haircut and the world implodes. It just, I work for Warner, but like decisions, this still affects decisions that are made today. When I made my pilot, the actor's hair had to go through so many stages of approval before it was like, I mean, I think every single actor on my show is about to shave their head being like, oh my God, when is it going to be done? Like it, because it's just, it became this huge thing. And for me now as a showrunner, I, at this point, like kind of stay out of the hair conversation because I get freaked out by this. I don't want this to be my legacy. So like, I kind of let the actors on my show do, like we have one character who's a soldier, but the actor really doesn't like to have his hair in a regulation cut. And so he's like, I just want to grow it out. I'm growing it out. And at a certain point I was just like, you know what? It's your head. Like I can deal with, I don't want to be responsible for anybody's terrible haircut.
It's a crazy thing. It's also, I mean, so I need to ask you, what did you think of the haircut? Did you think it was okay? And I
no,
think
I remember not liking it as a kid. I remember I didn't even watch the show, and I remember being like, "Oh, why'd they do that to her?"
It's, I mean, I mean, obviously hindsight is 20/20. My guess is that if they could do it again, they wouldn't have been as severe about the haircut. Like, it's very short.
They could have made such
and a, it's got these weird little things.
Yeah, they could have made a big statement with a much different cut. But she, like, she had that, like, really specific, super curly hair that everybody wanted in the 90s, by the way. It was, like, her and Jesse Spano. And it was so cool. But, like, but, yeah, it was a very close crop. Later on, I mean, a few years later, Justin Timberlake had that same exact haircut.
Yes, it's true. His looked like ramen, though, but hers, hers didn't look as...
Well, because he was in a boy band, so there's a certain amount of hair product that has to be consumed every month by a boy band, or they're kicked out of the boy band club. So he had to put a lot of crunch in there.
Sure.
But during Bye Bye Bye, like, if he air dried his hair during the Bye 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 era, it would look exactly like Carrie Russell's. This is what I'm here for, Phil.
So I love this. So here's the thing. And I want to talk to you about sort of season finales and season premieres, because it feels kind of like the season one finale, which I would argue is perhaps the best episode of the show, or certainly one of them. It's incredible. Leads into J.J. Abrams kind of doing what J.J. Abrams does, which is he kind of blows up the show at the end of season one and then tries to figure out how to put it back together again. And then through another series of grenades continues to blow up the show over the course of two episodes at the top of season two. And so as a showrunner, I guess my question is, are you ever tempted to do things like that? And if you are, how do you sort of navigate the minefield of doing something like that?
I mean, kind of, because... So the season one finale of Roswell, New Mexico ended. We didn't know if we had a pickup for season two yet.
Right.
And it ended on like five huge cliffhangers.
Right.
That were really so big that I had, like, our finale aired on a Tuesday and we got picked up for season two on a Wednesday. And my first thought when I got the phone call from the president of the network, Mark Pedowitz, I hung up the phone and I went, oh shit. I had to figure out how to fix what I blew up at the end of the season. And I think I kind of did that again in season two, which I can't really talk about. But at the end of season two, there's some shit that, like, when we got back to the writer's room for season three, all of the writers kind of stared at me like, okay, what's your plan? What are we going to do? And I just kind of stared back at them and was like, I don't know.
Right.
What do we got, guys? Like, and I think that on a show like Felicity, where the stakes are, they're not even lower. They're just so different. Because when you're in college, the stakes of which boy are you going to choose for your road trip are very big stakes.
Right.
But like the temptation to push things and push things and push things is there. I remember season one, when she lost her virginity to that art guy, I was like, devastated. And this was not me at 12, by the way. This was me at 19 being like, no.
Yeah. It was devastating. And this sort of comes to my second question, which is that I do feel like in today's landscape, we're a lot more plotty. We're a lot more sort of like things need to happen all the time. And character is baked into those things. Mm-hmm. But character in terms of emotion isn't at the forefront as much as it maybe used to be, in the sense of sort of big moves need to happen.
Think about this episode in particular. Ben and Felicity break up three times in this episode. And like, it's a very slow, like, oh, I broke up with her, but did I really want to? Let me go stare at her a little and think about it and like talk about it. Yeah, I think it was like, I wrote down last night, I was like writing down things that I wanted to talk about. And one of the things that I wrote down was just the quote, I don't know what to say. Like three times in the episode, they were like, I don't know what to say. And I kept thinking, like, I could never do that on my show because I don't have time for people to figure out. Like, say whatever you would have gotten to an hour later, I need you to say it right now on my show. But with Felicity, it's like, it's okay that it takes Ben 3 days and a bunch of backpedaling and changing his mind and stuff to decide what he wants. And ultimately, Felicity has to decide what she wants. And that takes the entire episode.
Which is crazy.
Normally it would be like an explosive breakup at the end of an episode. And then the next week she's, you know,
moved on.
Trying to find somebody else to fall in love with, or hating his new girlfriend or whatever. And so the living and the emotion of it certainly is different, but it's funny because one of the things that does to us is it makes us remember what that feels like.
Yeah.
You know, it makes us the thing that blows my mind about Felicity when I watch it now is how embarrassed I am all the time while I'm watching it. Like just sitting there like, oh no, you didn't say that. Why are you saying that? Please don't say it again. You're going to say it again. And like, it's a lot of that is because of the long pauses that they give you to really think about what's about to happen.
So I have a question, but I want to read a quote here, a line that Felicity has at the end of this episode, because it leads into my question, which is at the end of the episode, we're going to jump around, but at the end of the episode, Felicity confronts Ben and says, I'm an emotional person. I feel things and I need to be able to get upset and to talk about how I'm feeling. I mean, that's just who I am. I can't change it. I don't want to. And the thing is, you knew that. You knew it and you still pursued me because you want something with me. You're just not strong enough to have it, which in a way makes you a coward. And that's fucking amazing to me that like that the show had not just the balls to do it, but I love the empowerment of Felicity in this show, of her figuring out the person she wants to be, the person she wants to be with, and that can be the ultimate grenade to blow up the show for at least a season is incredible to me.
It's so interesting because they let her be so emotionally immature at times.
Yep.
And then when it really counts, she really likes herself. And I think that was something that was really, you know, different then and really kind of empowering to see now, is that she doesn't come in and apologize for being an emotional person. She doesn't apologize for using the word love, maybe a little prematurely. She doesn't even really feel that embarrassment that I feel watching it. Honestly, she just is kind of, she doesn't hate herself for those things. So there is a really good line in this episode where she says something along the lines of, I don't like my heart right now. Yeah. Like I'm following my heart, but I don't, what is it? Hold on. I'm going to find it. Yeah. I wrote it down. I hate my heart right now, she says. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's a really good line. But she does sort of she does lean into how she feels and calling him out on it and basically being like, you know, that's who I am. And you wanted it to change. You thought I don't know if it was so much about whether he wanted her to change or whether he just kind of wanted her to put that part of herself in a little box and leave it and set it aside for him for a while was sort of what it felt like. But he can't even argue it. He doesn't argue it. He just says, I don't know what to say.
He can't argue it because I would argue Ben is a flawed character at this point in the show. Yeah. And they have the
courage. All of the points in the show, Phil.
I mean, I don't want to say it, but he at least this season is about him sort of growing to some degree or another. But I, you know, one of the things that I found really interesting as I was talking about I talked about the finale with Michael Asiello, and we talked about sort of why it works so well. And I think one of the reasons that Ben bothers me sometimes is that he doesn't actually love Felicity. He loves the way she looks at him and the way she sees him and the way she makes him feel, which is a really narcissistic and shitty thing to do to another human being who genuinely cares about you. And I appreciate that in this episode, Felicity throws it back in his face and says, you're a fucking coward.
Mm-hmm. He wants her to make him feel good, but he doesn't want her to overwhelm him with all of her annoying girl feelings.
Really. He just wants it to be chill. He just wants her to be hot all the time and just open to him. And it sucks.
And available when he wants her to be available, but then he ditches her and just doesn't show up to Bryant Park. Yeah. And she eats a sad croissant sandwich in the park alone.
How sad is that moment?
It's the saddest croissant I've ever seen in my life.
I also think that this folds well into what I think the theme of this episode, which is be honest with yourself. Don't let others dictate the type of person you want to be, the choices that you want to make. Fuck what others think. Let your freak flag fly, all of that. And I love that this episode is about that. And, the Gretchen storyline, which is essentially that there's this girl who's one of her advisees and she's dating a boy who clearly you know, doesn't respect her. And she's sort of doing, I guess it's, and forgive me, but like Cosmo does these lists, right?
Yeah, is that it's what like it is? They call it Girl World on the show, but it's just like a Cosmo mag. Like, ways to get your man to love you.
Which she
Put
starts
blush
doing.
On your nipples.
Is that a thing, by the way?
I guess.
I've never heard of it. Listen, Phil, I don't know. So, but I think that it's, you know, it might not be the most subtle. I mean, it's still television, but I really love what it brings out in Felicity. The episode is called The List, based on this list. And she respects herself enough to sort of pick and choose the things she's willing to do on the list, but she still
does
things.
She does not put blush on her nipples.
Not that we know of.
it's such an interesting thing because the show is on team don't change yourself for a man, right? Yeah. But the camera isn't. The camera is like panning up Felicity's body while she's in a sexy red dress and adjusting the heel of her stiletto. And I thought it was very interesting that they still, even in this episode, that's like very, very, very don't change yourself for a man. You don't have to dress up in a red dress. They're still using the male gaze with that camera. And like, that's not a shot you see of Felicity when she's in her mom jeans and her brown sweater. So they lean in, they do. And I think that it's an interesting thing to watch as like a person who's, you know, a filmmaker, essentially. I haven't directed yet, but I want to. You think a lot about whose eyes are these this camera supposed to be? And they use that shot, like that is it's an iconic shot of her adjusting her heel. And then it pans up. She's wearing this like backless, slinky red dress. And they use it a lot in promotion for the show. And still it's supposed to be like not really who Felicity is. So I think it's interesting to see.
I truly thought the same thing. As soon as she walks down the hall in the dress with her hair really being showcased because it's all about to go away.
Right.
So they're so really...
The hair is just flying.
It's everywhere. The and I did think to myself, I mean, listen, she looks great. She's a beautiful woman, but there is a way that it's trying to have his cake and eat it too, right? Where and that's, I agree with you, it's a little tricky. It's a male director, mostly male directors back in that time. So I would agree with you. It's unfortunate. It also does prove a point, which is that Ben obviously is a fucking moron who immediately is like, right.
It works on Ben, for sure. So I was trying to figure out if it worked on Noel too, or if Noel was just, because the shot from, listen, I'm a Noel fan, Noel all the way.
Noel, please.
But the shot from Noel's perspective was not like elevator eyes. It was literally, she's in an elevator and he's watching her, but you don't feel like he's like, holy shit, Felicity's dress. You feel like he's like, why is she going upstairs with Ben? Yeah. And I think that the eyes of the camera did very different things there. And it was interesting because it really leaned into the difference between a boy and a man, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, in the next episode, she literally says to Noel, like, what was I thinking? Like, what was she thinking? but it's interesting to see sort of how they try to, they don't generally speaking do this to Felicity very often. More times than not, her hair is up and she's wearing a sweater. they're making a statement with this. Speaking of the hair being up, I spoke to Lawrence Trilling, who did some episodes at the end of, did 14 episodes in general. And I asked him about the fact that her hair is up a lot in the premiere and in this episode, and whether or not that was a conscious effort to prepare the audience for the fact that her hair was about to get cut off. He claims it wasn't. He said it was just really hot and that Carrie didn't like her hair being all over her neck, which is totally fair, but I'm choosing to believe that it was part of what I think it is, because it does kind of prepare me a little bit for it. They don't do it at all in season one. And I just wonder whether or not it does sort of make me go like, it's weird when it's up, but like,
I don't know. That anything could have prepared us for this seismic shift in culture.
It's nuts. It's nuts.
But if it was that, then I applaud the effort. I mean, who knows? You know, her being the heat, they shot in LA, right? LA in July when you start filming an episode. Like, she could have been like, please chop it off, you know?
For real, though. Yeah. They shot it in like a warehouse in Culver City. It wasn't even like on a lot or anything like that.
Yeah.
So you brought up Noel. Let's talk a little bit about his storyline in this episode, which is Noel doesn't know how to ask out a girl. Not the strongest of storylines.
But it is, okay, first of all, the show pretending for 4 years that Scott Foley isn't hot is hilarious to me. For fucking years. I mean, even last night I was watching it and I was like, Sean's good looking. Even great. Like, anyway. But one, that's really funny. There was a moment where they were at the, Noel and Elena were at the restaurant and Elena made some comment in front of the waiter that implied that Noel was a virgin. And then a few seconds later, he stands up and I'm looking at him and I'm like, you are like clearly a 30 something year old man. Like, like, come on. Like, he's worried about somebody. Anyway, I just, so funny. But it is an interesting storyline because it really, really mirrors Felicity's storyline. Elena is essentially making Noel a list of things he needs to do. But the show doesn't really lean into the fact that she's trying to change him. The show isn't like, come on, Noel, you don't have to be that guy. Like, they're just trying to make him better.
I mean, he is, he's really an asshole to her in the premiere. So they're really trying to make us just be like, Noel's sweet, right?
Which I get.
It unfortunately felt a little repetitive. It felt like they kind of, they did the same beats a couple times, which I was a little bit, you know.
And I also, it frustrated me that he was such an asshole to her. I guess that's what you're sort of talking about when you say like they blow up the show, is like they take their nice guy and turn him into a total dick. And it's hard to watch. I think it's, it, it does make you feel like you're doing this for.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
For shock value, maybe, or like, because the plot doesn't work if everybody's great to each other, but you created a bunch of great characters.
Yeah.
I don't know. I remember on, to totally as an aside, on Gilmore Girls, I remember that Dean was great. And Dean would read all the same books that Rory was reading and talk to her about them. And then Jess came in. And suddenly Dean like didn't know how to read anymore. Like suddenly the like they were like, Dean knows how to make a car, but he can't spell. And it was like you had to make this the other guy worse. Or maybe not even worse, just like create a bigger like contrast between them. Which is such a like, you know, the love interest, the love triangle you always want to be between the bad boy and the good one. But on this show, it's like I don't know. Neither of them falls into that category properly.
This actually leads to a question that I wanted to ask you about love triangles in general, because it does feel like this show is kind of the quintessential one for me a little bit. Like it does it really well. I think there's a bunch of factors. Fate plays a hand in the casting to some degree or another. But there's a part of me that feels like milking a love triangle successfully for 100 episodes of television, that is not an easy task. No. I don't need to tell you that. So it's, I guess my question to you is,
I would just like to say to anybody who watches Roswell, New Mexico, who's listening to this, I promise I'm not going to milk a love triangle for 100 episodes of television. Calm down. It'll be over soon.
but don't you feel like, I mean, I hate to do this because it does feel like this is a little bit of a trope, but it is the journey. It's not the destination, right? You have to enjoy the will they, won't they. And once it's gone, you find yourself wistfully looking backwards and saying to yourself, oh, I wish that I had that back again.
So I will say that as a viewer, as a TV yeah. viewer, I'm not like a shipper, and I never have been. Even when I was 12 and sneaking downstairs to watch Dawson's Creek, I wasn't like, if she doesn't end up with Pacey, I will die and burn down Kevin Williamson's house. What I did get excited about was when things would shift. Like, you know, she spent X amount of time madly in love with Dawson, and then you start to slowly watch her fall for Pacey, and you're like, ooh, things are changing. And then it's graduation, and she's been with Pacey all year, and Pacey broke her heart, but now it's graduation, and oh my gosh, she's looking at Dawson again. And I'll get excited about that too. And so that's how I feel as a writer, is like the best part of watching people fall in and out of love on TV is the part, the Kevin Williamson calls it the like the sweaty hands, the sweaty palms, shaky knees part of the love story. And I love that. And so I don't mind watching Felicity sort of the ebb and flow between Ben and Noel, because I'm always down for what the next turn is going to be. I think one of my favorite scenes, it doesn't take place in 1999. So I don't know.
Please. If I'm allowed to talk about it. Talk about it.
But when she does have that like rooftop moment with Noel later on, mm-hmm. I think it's the top
of season four. She has.
Yeah. And there's a Ryan Adams song playing, and it's like just really fucking perfect. That's one of my favorite scenes of TV, and it comes kind of, it's a little bit of an out of character move, and it's kind of shocking, but it's like, it's just so juicy to watch. And I think they did that really well. Yeah. Milking it for 100 episodes.
It's not easy. I mean, it's a crazy thing. And I think mm-hmm. that part of the reason that it works is the choice they made up top of season two, which is, you know, Lawrence Sterling talked about how hard it was to direct that scene between Carrie Russell and Scott Foley, because both of them were just like, this is awful and I hate mm-hmm. this. But you had to have Felicity get kicked in the teeth pretty significantly at the top of season two. So she's putting herself back together again, essentially through the remainder of the series. But again, it's so interesting to me how these small moves feel so seismic. In a way that feels very sort of almost Cameron Crowe-y, in the sort of like small moments feel big.
That rooftop kiss in this episode between Ben and Felicity is like, it's arguably one of the sexiest things that has happened or does mm-hmm. ever happen on the show. And they're mm-hmm. not having sex in the scene. They're just kissing. But it's like, you want, you know, for a minute, you're Ben, you're the elevator eyes guy. And you're just like, oh my God, please. Like,
It's true. Throughout this episode, we have Sean kind of on Ben's shoulder the whole time saying, you know, you're not ready for her. You're not ready for her. And he's right. I mean, he's older. He feels like he has some wisdom to impart on him. But I think that it works because it is the audience also saying he's not ready for this. Like, it's mm-hmm. just not, it doesn't feel right. I also,
it's so interesting because this is the episode when I started to like Sean. Mm-hmm. I really felt I hate meddlers on TV, mm-hmm. and I felt like he was sort of there to meddle. Yep. And then in this episode, I found myself really rooting for him with Julie, and I was like, damn it.
That doesn't play out well. But
no, it doesn't. But I Megan, always root for the underdog.
Him and Megan are great together. I love their relationship.
Yeah.
And Megan is, as I said before, kind of my MVP of this show. I think she's... It must have been so much fun to write Megan, and to see her transition from being, you know, I don't want to say a caricature in season one, but she just wasn't fully fleshed out until she sort of, as we become the series regular. Like,
your freshman roommate is kind of a caricature in real life.
Right.
They're just like this like invader into your space. Like eventually they become a person to you. But at first they're just like a person who you're just like, what does hair elastic on the door mean? What the fuck?
They're an alien to your world for sure. Yeah.
She's spectacular. She's really fun in this episode too.
The box is the fucking best.
Yeah.
It's the best. And the Twilight Zone episode with the box it's just great.
I like your Twilight Zone episode with the box I don't like the let's go back in time and ruin Noel and Felicity a second time thing and they do at the end. But I'll give JJ the Twilight Zone episode with the box.
Well, you know, it's funny. And this, I do really want to hear your thoughts on this. So you know, obviously, you know, they asked for an episode order of Felicity's final season. They wrote a finale. They finished the show. And then the WB is like, actually, can you give us five more?
A perfect finale.
Yeah, it's great.
A beautiful finale. Directed by Scott Foley, by the way.
Yeah,
pretty
great.
Badass.
Yeah.
And then they tack four more episodes onto the show.
But my question to you is this. If someone said to you, well, you finished your show, but you can do a four-episode, essentially, epilogue. I mean, I don't want to put you in this
spot.
You say yes, right?
That is four episodes of pay for your crew.
Absolutely.
And at the end, what your job is, a lot of my job as a showrunner, is balancing what is like happening in my brain as an artist and what's happening in my brain as a person who is running a very big business. And so, yeah, you say yes to the four episodes. I'll tell you, last season of Roswell for season two, they never told us how many episodes they were ordering for us. They were going back and forth between 13 episodes and 16 episodes the whole season. And it wasn't until I had turned in episode 11 that they said, yep, it's just 13, which sucks because it's a murder mystery of sorts. And so then I have to pack all of the reveals. I couldn't plan for either of them because if I had been planning for like, okay, we have 16 episodes, then they suddenly cut it short and then I have too much to pack into the stories, which is kind of what ended up happening. But if I had planned for only 13 and then they had extended it by three, my characters would have looked dumb because all the clues would have been there to solve the mystery. And they have to wait three more episodes to solve it. So I was like going back and forth between those two things all season and it was really hard. And so I feel for the powers that be that suddenly they've graduated Felicity from college and now they have to do four more episodes. However, let's introduce time travel is not the way that I would have gone with that.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. But I felt like, as a
Noel fan,
yes,
and a person who was very much Team Noel,
sure,
I got to the end of the series, to the episode that was supposed to be the finale, and I wasn't happy with her choice, but I felt satisfied by it because the end of the show was Noel and Felicity sitting together at the airport and kind of thinking like, you know, we wouldn't change it, like, or sort of thinking about the idea that like there's a whole other world in which a different choice was made and what would that look like? And that's real life, right? You look back on moments in your life and you're like, man, that was that I didn't know at the time, but that was my sliding doors moment. And that was a really satisfying ending to me, even as a Noel fan. But then to have them answer that question of what if we'd made a different choice? And the answer is our friend would have died and there would have been and the school would have burned down. What? And it would have been all along like, you don't even leave me my fan fiction to write about what would have happened if she just fucking chose Noel from the beginning. You won't even let me have that, J.J. Abrams. Someday I'm going to meet J.J. Abrams at a party and I'm going to be like,
please
talk to you, sir. Please sit down. Can I get you a pigs in a blanket? Because this is going to be a while.
I do love that that's the thing you'd confront him on, though. 100%. Of all the television that he's made, I do love that that's the one.
I agree. It's very strange. That's it. Like, do whatever you want with Lost, whatever. People should have known that they weren't going to, whatever. But the last four episodes of Felicity were a betrayal.
I don't disagree with you. I think that it's more of a, like, in theory, a sliding doors thing is interesting.
Yeah.
They overcommit to it and they go too big with it, which is weird for a show that
people
was all about
die
small moments.
And there's fire. Like,
yeah, it's great. It's great. So speaking of small moments, one of my favorite moments in this episode is actually a sad moment, but Felicity in the back room gives Ben the photo she took during the trip. And she says, aren't you going to look at them? And the look
That's
on her face,
I mean.
She's so excited. She's so expectant. And then he crushes her with just not giving a fuck.
Yeah. That's what I mean about the embarrassment is because they make you live in that moment of her being like, so hopeful, so hopeful. And the thing is, we've all fucking been there.
Yep.
We've all fucking been like, look at this great picture. Okay, cool. You know, like we've all been that person. I don't know a single person who hasn't, in one way or another, had an unrequited love in their life, whether it's like only kind of requited or whatever. Like, and it's such a feeling. It's such an easy feeling to call back. Like, you can be solid in a relationship, love the person that you're with so much, and then you watch an episode of TV like that, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's what that felt like. Oh, yeah. And it's so visceral. It's so, like, I wanted to curl up in the fetal position last night and just be like, oh, make it stop. Look at the photo. God damn it. But the thing is, the show does it so brilliantly, because then later on, when he wants her again, he's looked at the photos.
And it's a great photo of her too.
And you win, he wins her back by taking that moment that made her feel so uncomfortable.
Yep.
And he just undoes it. And there's such a feeling of like, I don't know, my friend is such a just chatting, but my friend Mink is a singer, and she wrote this song that just came out called Elsewhere, and I've listened to it 1 million times over the course of quarantine. Highly recommend it.
Okay.
But it's about that being at a party just hoping that one person's gonna show up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they said they were gonna show up, and they're like not showing up, and you're kind of like, why did I invest in this person? They obviously aren't excited, and then they show up. And you forget entirely about the 2 hours that you just spent thinking about, why did I invest in this person? Because then now they're here and it's all gone. And that's kind of what that moment is with Felicity, is it's like, she's like, he didn't look at the photos, and she's seen, you feel it. You feel her like, oh no, this isn't balanced. This the way that I feel isn't the way that you feel. And then when he comes back and he's like, it was a great photo, and she says we looked happy, like he just wins her back right away. Like,
well, it's so easy. This ties into, so one of the myriad of breakups they have in this episode, he goes back to her room and he tries to sort of open up a little bit and has a little bit of wherewithal to explain that he's scared of her expectations of him, which
and then
is
he listened to the tapes.
And then he listened to the tapes, but which is an enormous invasion of privacy. But the idea that Ben is sort of teetering on cognizance is interesting, that he sort of is like, okay, I'm dealing with your expectations of me and my expectations of myself and all those sort of things do make him complex and interesting. Mm-hmm. It's just, wow. I mean, it's just, he doesn't know how to process this. And then Felicity smacks him down with his lack of being able to process it.
The thing that's so interesting is like, he is self-aware and still chooses the shitty road. Like, he still chooses the road of, I'm not going to be the good guy, even though he's really aware of the fact that there are two choices here and two people that he could be.
Yeah.
And a version, I think he's just like, he knows that there's a man he wants to be. He's choosing not to be that man right now. And that to me is one very interesting as far as like, who he is as a character and as far as a writing choice too, to take your lead guy and make them just do something that's kind of shitty. And it's not a mistake. It's not an accident. It's just kind of a shitty thing that he does.
Yep.
It's a bold choice. Honestly.
It is. I mean, he recognizes his faults, and in theory, you know, by the end of this season, he has grown and fixed himself. Or at least that's what they'd like us to believe.
I don't know. I think teetering on the edge of cognizance is a good way to describe Ben for all four seasons of Felicity, to be honest.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I do love that Megan loves that Ben listened to the tape, because she just loves the drama of it.
Yeah.
Michael Peña is great in the episode playing Brian Burke, which is a ridiculous thing in and of itself.
Name. Yes, okay.
It's
I couldn't remember.
A lot.
Yeah.
They call him Berkey.
That is a thing to unpack.
Yeah.
Like one of very few characters of color on your show, and you make them Brian Burke.
Can we just talk for a second about Sean's loft apartment and why it's an absolute fantasy that no one could possibly afford or live in said apartment? But I love it. It's great. But no one could live in it.
I mean, literally, that doesn't exist in New York City anymore.
Yeah,
and if it
ridiculous.
Did, it's like Elon Musk lives there.
I want to talk just for a quick second about other people's hair in this episode, because okay. obviously the show became very hair focused, but the waitress's hair is crazy 90s.
Oh, that, was like, that all weird like
spiky
the
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Bridget is doing a zigzag part in her hair.
Yeah. Yeah. The zigzag part, by the way, I think it's coming back.
The zigzag part.
Yeah, I really do.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm not hating it.
I have this theory that we're all going to emerge from quarantine and just like want to do stuff.
Yes.
We're going to want to, there was a time when people were like gluing gemstones to their face, not for Coachella, but for like a yeah. normal day.
Yeah.
Like people are just going to want to be like done up. And so I have this butterfly clips might come back, dude. They might come back.
I mean, sure. Great. I mean, I also feel like a lot of people are going to immerse themselves in comfort food television, a lot of which is from the 90s. So I think mm-hmm. a lot of people are going to emerge from this quarantine thinking that that's okay again.
Yep. They should. I love it. I mean, I'm here for the weird parts and the butterfly clips and the random braids and all of those things.
It's fantastic.
I mean, I love the 90s. My whole soundtrack of my show is all 90s music, and everyone's like, why? And I'm like, because I want it to be.
Yeah, the pilot that I'm developing right now takes place in 97.
I've heard 90s. Very good things about this pilot, by the way.
thank you very much. So to pivot to Julie and Sean for a second, Julie,
wait, can I say one more thing about the haircut?
Please.
Why does she have bare feet in a hair salon? There is a long, long shot of her bare feet
yes.
as she's getting yes. her hair cut.
Yes.
And I am so upset about this.
It's gross.
It kept me up all night.
It's gross. Like, put some shoes
gross.
On.
It was gross. It's gross now. It was gross then. What are you? She's not like in her bath. I remembered the bare feet shot, and then when I was watching the show and she went to an actual hair salon, I was like, did I get that bare feet shot? Was that like stuck in my head? Because in my mind she was like in her bathroom at the dorm cutting her hair, and even then, pretty gross to not be wearing shoes. Get some shower shoes, but she is barefoot at this hair salon, and it's such a like. That's what I mean when it's like a director makes a choice and it's like, oh, the light is cool. We're going to have her beautiful, like dainty little bare feet dangling. And I'm just like,
no, it's gross.
How dare you? That should have been the outrage. That should be the iPhone notes apology. We're very sorry about the haircut because of the bare fucking feet. Anyway, that's
I also can't believe that Felicity refers to it as the hair cutting place.
Yeah, that's true. It was very weird, the hair cutting place. But she's Felicity, so.
It's like very strange. But she's Felicity, so we don't question it. At this point in the episode, basically, Felicity agrees to compromise herself, basically, for Ben. And they decide to go to Bryant Park, and he stands her up, as you mentioned. And that, to me, is the breaking point. That was when I was like, fuck Ben. Like,
the sad just, sandwich.
It's awful. But then you also have Gretchen saying to Felicity, I respect you because you would never compromise yourself to be with a guy, mm-hmm. which is the moment when Felicity's like, I hate myself and I have to dump Ben, basically.
Yeah. Gretchen says, oh, don't be mad. I took your advice for like a couple of hours. I love that one.
Her makeover made me so sad.
Yeah, I know. It really looks painful.
It's kind of but so just to wrap up on the Sean and Julie stuff, this is the beginning of the Sean having a crush on Julie storyline, which she doesn't pick up on. He gives her her half of the money from the party, which is $700, to which she says, I didn't even make $700 all summer. And I'm just like,
What were you doing, Julie?
You like busking? Like, what were you doing? But anyway, so he gives her the money and says, hey, we make a good team. Like, we should do more things together. And of course, goes right over her head. She doesn't mm-hmm. pay any attention to it.
He's so friend zoned. And it's really
so,
sad.
So friend zoned. And it's sad too, because it feels like, and I'm curious as to your thoughts on this. You have a big cast on your show, and you got a lot of quote unquote mouths to feed. You've got a lot of storylines you need to give all of your characters. And it's hard. Right, to make sure that everyone's getting enough Sure. But on top of enough, you need to make sure that it's stuff that is good. I mean, that you're that the actors are happy with and that you're happy with. And it feels like the show never fully knew what to do with Julie. Yeah. She just always felt like a round peg in a square hole. And in this season, you really see it because they basically don't give her anything to do through most of the season. What are your feelings on how to sort of manage a large cast?
I mean, we run into those things a lot in that you don't want a person who's like a series regular on your show to just be an obstacle in someone else's storyline. You don't want to, you know, isolate somebody, satellite story them, is what you call it, is like when somebody has a love interest, but that story is not connected to the rest of the story, you know, you satellite them. The trick that I kind of developed on the originals was that you want to rotate it so that the people that are sort of at the bottom of the call sheet, like the Julies, you want to connect their storylines to the people at the top of the call sheet. And that's the way to keep them involved and avoid the problem of they're just floating off in the distance going like the idea that like Julie meets a couple of guys and goes on a couple of dates in this episode. And we don't see any of those guys or like that would never happen with Felicity. Yeah. Felicity would never be like, oh, I went on two casual dates in a row and we just missed them. And so my trick as a writer is to keep connecting them to the top of the call sheet. So, you know, that's on smart. Our show, we make sure that Kyle has stories with Liz and that, you know, bringing them up. And but it can be hard, especially on a show like this, I think, where it's like I'm lucky because my show, we have a hospital, we have a doctor, we have a cop, we have a scientist, we have a, you know, sure, and so there's always a lot of, and also they're aliens. So there's always a lot going on for people to be involved in and for people to have reasons to be committed to things. Whereas, you know, something like this, I can imagine it would be really hard because in college, if you want to tell a story about a girl and her relationship, the best friend just becomes the voice in their ear.
Yep.
And especially as they sort of like, as Elena's importance to the show rose, as you know, as it should have probably a long time ago. Yep. Julie got sort of pushed off to the side. But I don't know. I felt like they never defined her that well. Like
they didn't.
I never understood what was different about her and special about her. And that was probably the big mistake.
I mean, I think that they wanted her to be kind of a Swiss Army knife, right? Which is they wanted her to kind of fit in whenever they needed her to. She starts off being an antagonist because she gets to be with Ben. And then by the end of season one, she's angry at Felicity because Felicity gets to be with Ben. And you know, part of it too, I think, to your initial point about connecting to the top of your call sheet, Ben, when Felicity breaks up with Ben, he really becomes a satellite character. I mean, he's off having sex with Terry Polo through most of season two. And he's, you know, he's just kind of off on his own stories, which means that the people that are most connected to him, which is Julie and Sean, they kind of become satellite characters.
Yeah.
So it's to your point, it's tricky when your show's called Felicity. Everyone needs to be a part of Felicity's life. And if they're not, what are they?
Yeah. So. That said, I do think that like they probably could have, you know, had her rooming with them earlier on or whatever. But then we would have lost Megan and we don't want to lose Megan. So I do think though that that's kind of why Megan's character became elevated later on is because she was in Felicity's orbit for longer than, you know, it didn't matter what Felicity's choices were. Mm-hmm. Megan was always in her orbit, no matter what the choices were.
Well, Karina, thank you so much for doing this. I really,
thank
really
you.
Appreciate you coming on, and I hope that you'll come back.
I have one more thing I want to talk about.
Please.
You read so much. Stuck in here. You got me all day, buddy. You read most of Felicity's quote to Ben at the end of the episode, but
I did
not the part that was the part that I was like, oh no, please don't say this. And I watched her say it. However, 15 years ago when I first watched the show, but she says, one day you're going to wake up and you're going to realize what you missed and it's going to be too late. And that's the moment where I was like, your speech went too far, Felicity. You were so on. You nailed it. You just like, you really just got to the heart of who he is. And then you got arrogant. And it's like,
should have walked away while you were ahead.
Oh, you should have quit while you were ahead. And remind me of in the Dawson's Creek pilot, Pacey says to his teacher, Yeah. I'm the best sex you'll never have. And it's like, really? Because you're 16. Are you? And that's kind of what this feels like. Is she's just like, she after an episode of like insecurity, she suddenly is like, you're going to miss me, motherfucker. And it, to me, I was like, no, yeah. Felicity.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just had to mention that one.
No, it's so funny you say that, because as I was watching it, I was like, fuck yeah, like this is great. Yes. And then she tips it. And on some level, the tip is kind of believable. Like it is believable.
Oh, it's so Felicity.
But yeah.
It's so Felicity. Yeah. It's so Felicity. It's so, yeah. This is the girl who chased a boy across the country because he wrote something nice in her yearbook. This is like, you know what I mean? Like, there you go. Yeah. There she is. Like, but I just had to mention it.
I appreciate you mentioning it. It's true.
In the fetal position while I watched, I was like, no.
Well, I hope that she'll come back and talk about Roswell with us. I'd love to talk about the pilot of the original Roswell.
Yes,
and Dawson's and all sorts of things. But I really appreciate you coming on, and this was great.
Let's talk about Roswell. I bet I could get my buddy Jason Baer to join us too.
That'd be amazing. I would love that.
He's also locked up in quarantine and bored out of his mind. So
everyone is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you. This is super fun. Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it. You want a podcast like it? 1999.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.